Delsing spent 25 years on the PGA Tour and is a lifetime member of the PGA Tour and PGA of America. Now he provides his unique perspective as a golfer and network broadcaster. It's time to go On the Range with Jay Delsing.
On the Range is brought to you by 20 Minutes to Fitness.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay Perley. Good morning.
Morning, Jay. Ready to roll here.
How you doing over there?
Good.
We've got some fun things to talk about this show. We got an interview with Hank Haney.
Fantastic.
Yeah. When you Google somebody and you pull up their page, it's just impressive. He's in the Texas Golf Hall of Fame and the Teachers Hall of Fame, among other things. Multiple times been Teacher of the Year and things like that.
And front and center in teaching golf instructing news for as far back as I can remember.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got an episode of Whack and Chase, and we've got, I'm calling this a Let's Be More Accurate on Our Facts
Sort of
Show.
Oh, boy, that is a slippery slope. Very slippery slope.
It's
written down, and you're just going to read it verbatim.
Exactly. It's not really that hard to be more, because we've been pretty much less up until this point.
I still get a little concerned with that commitment, but I see you have them written down, so that's okay.
Reading has always been challenging anyway.
Meat's here to double-check and edit your reading.
Right, that's right. All right, so we got to talk just a little bit about this driver testing and tell people what's going on tour with the driver testing, okay? So it's a complete cluster out on tour. Basically, what's happening is these manufacturers, Callaway, TaylorMade, Titleist, etc., they're making these drivers, and then they have to be sent, or they're supposedly tested, to make sure about how thick the face is, Pearl, and how much it trampolines the ball off. The USGA and the RNA have come up with some guidelines.
Are they telling anybody what the guidelines are?
No.
Okay, perfect. That's a good start.
And how do you think the players are jumping in with this?
They're jumping out of it. Yeah, they don't like change. They don't like to be told what to do. They don't like restrictions. They don't want to be told what club to hit. So probably not well.
Yeah, so earlier in the year, they had a little thing where they sent memos out to the players saying, hey, look, you know, this is just come on by. We'll test your stuff, and we'll let you know how they all did. How many players do you think swung by?
Hopefully none.
Zero.
Hopefully none.
Not one player swung by. So then they said, all right, so now we've got to start randomly because we want to be fair.
Come on down to the police station and let's just have a chat. There's really nothing wrong, but we thought we just should have a chat.
Well, the funny thing is, though, John, is that none of the players are responsible for what their drivers are, you know, whether they're conforming or not. They're in terms of how they were built. They didn't tell the manufacturer, hey, build me something illegal. But they are responsible to not play with something that conforms.
They just can't know.
Right, right.
So I don't see a problem here. I think they're off to a great start.
So the biggest thing that what happened is last year, 2 days before the British Open, Xander Schauffele's driver was deemed illegal. 2 days before the British Open.
I knew there was reason the little guy hit it so far.
Yeah, he was ticked.
Yeah, can you imagine? You know, it's, Hendrik Stenson went through, and well-documented with his three wood he used all those years, and I guess it finally cracked or something kind of gave way. And you say, oh, well, why doesn't the manufacturer just make another one the same? It doesn't work that way.
It does not work
like
that way.
It's like that putter, the Scotty Cameron, well, just get another one of those Scotty Camerons. There's something about it, and I can't, so, just a perspective or how the grip feels, but it's two clubs are not the same.
No.
And when you're completely relying on that one, as Hendrik did for all those years, and then the factory says, here's 10 more we made exactly the same, and he played for weeks. Obviously, it paid off. He won down at Hero, so and he hit a lot of three woods down there and a lot of really good ones. But, you're playing with these guys' heads. They don't like it. I think baseball players with their bats, to some degree. Now, obviously, a bat's not going to last very long for a whole lot of reasons, but some had a certain feel.
No, there's no question. I remember when I cracked the Great Big Bertha, I bet I hit 70 drivers, and I wound up going to a different brand. I couldn't get the same feel. But of the first 30 tested, Pearl, 8 of them were illegal.
Can we get this to my country club to where we can get people tested? Because, again, I just see some of these guys hitting way too far, and I know it's not their swing.
Yep.
I mean, that's what matters to me. I don't care about these guys. Who cares?
Yeah, that's right, right. That's right. They're not taking $2 from you on the weekend.
You're playing with. They hit it short, but they'd hit it shorter. Just imagine, like, if if the she's hit another 15, 20 yards shorter. I think you should try the trampoline effect on his
club.
Oh,
there's no question about that. There's no question about that.
It's not conforming in any way.
I can remember, and I told this story before, but when I played with Jim Thorpe at the Phoenix Open, you were standing right. You might have even been caddying for me. He got up on the 16th hole and hit this. He said to me, I got two shots today. I got a duck hook and a double duck hook. And he hits his double duck hook that misses the green left, and it scoots about 20 yards over the green to this back left hole location, and he hits this little zipper off that. We were playing back in, oh, man, that was in either January or February. So all that grass was all burnt out back there. It was dormant. Mm-hmm. And he hit this little low spinner. The greens were hard as a rock and hit it back up there a couple of feet. And he walked up to the green, and I said, hey, Jim, nice shot. And I said, let me see the grooves of that wedge. And he said something that we can't air on the TV or the radio, but he said, no.
He would have been disappointed if you wouldn't ask to see him.
That's right.
He's a good guy.
I can promise you that the grooves in his sandwich could have cut your finger. I mean, they were...
So they weren't conforming either. That was back in the day. We've talked about that a little bit in the past. Back in the day when they had the whole battle, you'd think they would have learned something from the groove battle.
Right.
They apparently have not. And now we're going to go through the trampoline effect battle.
Right.
There's only millions and millions of dollars online here in ego, so I can't imagine how this is going to go sideways.
No, not at all. So let's go on. So here's where we're going into some stats. And this is right
up
your alley.
I'm just getting warmed up on that subject. You're going to move me on. Okay, let's go.
We can keep going. So, Rookie of the Year. Any surprise to you? We had 7 first-time winners, but none of those guys were the Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year went to Sungjae Im. He was 191 under par in 35 starts on the PGA Tour as a rookie.
Wow. He didn't win.
I wasn't aware.
How much money did he make?
A lot.
Perfect. Now, that's the right kind of number we need to throw around.
That's right. Okay. Don't go throwing more questions at me. I only have the stats that I wrote down.
Did he win more than any of the other rookies?
Maybe.
I don't know. You got your stats down there, but oh man, I'm always afraid to ask a question.
Quit asking me questions, dude. All right. I'm going to my next stat. You ready?
I'm going to have another question for you in a second.
Me, can you cut his mic? All right, so we're going drive for dough and putt for show. You know, for years and years I was talking about it didn't matter how you drove, you just needed to putt well. We're talking about the strokes gained category. That's part of the new, all of these metrics that have come up in the game. And the top 10 money winners were 31.5 strokes gained off the tee with a 303.7 yard average. In accuracy, they averaged 105th on tour in accuracy. So that means they're smashing the hell out of it, not straight. Okay? Strokes gained putting in the average for the top 10 money winners in strokes gained putting was 58th. With only one of the top 10 cracking the top 20 in putting.
We got to dig into these numbers sometimes. It sounds like a whole lot of subjective coming up with any of those anyway. You can't hit it in the trees and out of bounds and bombing it and still shoot well. So there must be some kind of a miss factor that needs to be involved in that number as well. I'm not giving up on putting's the most important.
Oh, I'm totally agreeing with you. But when I saw these stats, I was like, what?
Yeah. Maybe we'll have bring a statistician in here and dig into the numbers. Who is somebody you could get from the tour? Where'd you get those numbers from?
This is from Golf Week, and I got them on Golf Week. Yeah,
but seriously, let's get the Golf Week guy that does the numbers, and let's dig into it a little bit. Maybe we can help straighten him out a little bit.
All right. Well, so check this out. This is one of your favorite players.
No, my favorite player.
Cameron Champ.
Yep.
All right. Set a record this year for smashing it off the tee. Okay. He set the record for the most drives of 320 yards or more.
Wow.
And beat Bubba Watson's, had the old record. How many drives of 320 yards or more do you think he hit?
Are they counting every drive every week, Jay? Or is it
I guess they must be now because of shot length being able to.
Not just the one or two holes like it used to be back in your day. Boy.
Anyway, I know it's a
450.
Yeah, 345.
See, pretty close.
I know.
Close enough for this show.
And he way good for this show. Even with, you know, he had mid-season back injury where he didn't play a few events. Bubba Watson set the record in 06, but just crazy. He won the driving distance competition. He averaged 317.9 yards off the tee, 4.4 yards longer than Rory McIlroy.
Well, I think his the one win, right? Was it just one win this year for him?
Yeah.
The one win came with something like a 347-yard drive on the last hole, a par 5, and then I think hit an 8-iron in or something like that. They were debating whether he should have 7 or 8, and he hit the 8-iron pin high and won that. So he not only had the longest drive, but he also had – we had some great personal stories this year that we've well documented. But his with his father, his grandfather, and unfortunately his grandfather passed away right after the tournament. We talked about, you know, how private or not private it should have been, that kind of stuff. But it certainly was emotional, and there's a lot of neat parts of his story.
Yeah. And then the last little stat tidbit that we're going to give for the show today was on Jordan Spieth. He had one of his worst years on tour, 4 top tens, 44th place finish in the FedEx Cup, right? He had a tie, the best finish was a tie for third at the PGA Championship. Pitiful stats ranking strokes gained off the tee and his approach shots, struggled with his long game. Easily his best year on the greens.
His best year on the greens?
Yeah.
That's hard to believe.
He led the tour in a couple surprising categories. Most rounds with 7 or more birdies. More than he did that 15 times, bro.
Wow.
7 or more
birdies?
So then
he can't be that far. I'll tell you, when I saw him down in at the Hero.
Can't be that far off?
Can't be that far off.
Right.
I mean, you're doing those kinds of things. At the Hero, when you look at the other guys, he virtually always looked off balance. And relative to this, what you and I would talk about, just that dynamic that you can kind of see in a guy's swing or not see it in a guy's swing, he doesn't have that dynamic.
He does not.
It looks like he's always trying to hit it maybe 5 yards further than maybe he should or 10 yards. And still, you know, I appreciate the stats. You know, we're holding him up against what he did several years ago, which I think is unfair for the rest of his life because he had a year of a lifetime.
That's right.
But some of the things that to me are kind of obvious is there isn't that dynamic, that kind of special rhythm. Seems to have that off, but 7 birdies that many times in a round of golf, he can't be that far away.
No. That's of all the stats, when I looked at that, I went, holy
shit. He's so talented. He's got so much going. My guess is he's going to click into this other piece, and you're going to see him right up there again.
Yeah, I sure hope so. Well, that's going to do it for the On the Range segment. Come back, Jay and Dan will be with you. We got our Hank Haney interview. This is Golf with Jay Delsing.
Quick note, we just got a call from our friend Joe Schieser at USA Mortgage. He said the rates are still below 4%, and if you mention Golf with Jay Delsing, he'll give you a discount on your closing costs. Please call him today at 314-628-2015.
Do you folks know about a family-owned and operated jewelry business that's been in the St. Louis area since 1946? If you haven't heard the name Sutley before, well, you have now. They are the premier Hearts on Fire dealer in the metropolitan region and have been for more than 21 years. What's a Hearts on Fire diamond, you ask? It is the world's most perfectly cut diamond. The Sutleys are knowledgeable and passionate about your jewelry needs and are open 6 days a week. They will treat you like family and want to understand your wishes and desires. Their business thrives on developing personal relationships with you. Sutleys also strive to stay on top of the latest trends in fashion with amazing selection of designer jewelry from famous designers like Lagos, Zengani, Simon G, just to name a few. It's all done at Sutley. Sutley's is on the cutting edge of the diamond business, featuring the lab-grown diamonds that can cost 30 to 40% less than a mined diamond. Whether it's a Hearts on Fire, designer or custom jewelry, or even the new and innovative lab-grown diamonds, let Sutley Jewelers take care of all your jewelry needs. I have known this family for 45 years. Go in and see Gary. Ask for Gus. Ask for Laura. It's a family business, and they are terrific people. They're located in the Lamp and Lantern Village on Clayton Road, just west of Highway 141 in Town and Country. You can also visit them at saettele.com.
Urban Chestnut Brewing Company is proud to be an official sponsor of 101 ESPN's newest show, Golf with our friend Jay Delsing. Just like Jay, Urban Chestnut is born right here in St. Louis. With three local brewing and restaurant locations, you won't travel far to sample straight from the source. If you're heading out to the links this weekend, or if you're just in the mood for a classic German-style beer, grab a four-pack of our fresh, refreshing Zwickel Bavarian Lager wherever craft beers are sold. Urban Chestnut Brewing Company, St. Louis, Missouri. Prost!
Let me tell you about a strength training program that helped me, and it can improve your golf game and overall fitness as well. And all it takes is 20 minutes once a week. 20 Minutes to Fitness targets the muscle groups used in golf. Because you work with a trainer on physical therapy equipment, it also reduces the chance of exercise-related injuries to almost zero. But don't take my word for it. Try it yourself. Your first session is absolutely free. 20 Minutes to Fitness is in Clayton and Chesterfield. To learn more, visit 20minutestofitness.com. 20 Minutes to Fitness. It works for me.
Grab your clubs. We're headed to the front line on golf with Jay Delsing.
The Front Nine is brought to you by the Ascension Charity Golf Classic.
Welcome back. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. We've got Pearly here with me. And John, let's go right to this interview with Hank Haney. Man, I guess the biggest thing, you know, Tiger Woods' teacher for over 7 years. He also had a huge influence on Mark O'Meara. He's in the Teaching Hall of Fame and the Texas State
One of the
Golf
first
Hall of Fame.
Big names, you know, when he started having the names, and he talks about moving, working with professionals instead of amateurs and stuff, and he's got quite a history.
But here comes Hank Haney.
There are so many things I want to ask you, but first of all, just give our listeners a little update. I know you had both of your knees done, and that's a hell of a challenge, and you got to be tough to get both your knees done at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, they don't do it much anymore, I guess. But I was in pretty good shape going in. I swim a lot. I try to swim like a mile a day and play pickleball and golf. So, I mean, I was in pretty good shape going in. And, you know, I didn't want to do it twice, so I did them both at the same time. It's a little rough the first couple of days, but they get you up. It's amazing. I mean, the day of the surgery, I had it in the morning, and that afternoon they get you up on your feet, and it's like, oh my gosh! I mean, it's just like hard to even believe. And I'm like 3 weeks out, and I'm, you know, moving around pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, it doesn't feel great. It hurts a little bit, but it's not like terrible. And you know, a lot of people, as you get older, I mean, I'm 64 years old. A lot of people face it: their knees, their hips. Knees are a little tougher than hips, they say. But I'm looking forward to being on the other side and, you know, kind of being pain-free. It'll be a nice deal. It was really tough to – had a hard time playing golf. Just I had a harder time walking than anything and uneven lies and that kind of stuff. So a lot of, you know, the same things that a lot of people say that play the game and, you know, have arthritis. But I feel pretty good now, and I'm happy I got it done. And I had a great doctor, Dr. Ted Firestone in Scottsdale, and he's like one of the best. So I feel very, very confident. And he was confident going in, so which makes you feel good, you know. I mean, it's like I told my wife, I said, man, he is like the cockiest guy I've ever met. But I said I'd rather have it that way than like you know, that commercial when they ask the nurse, how's that doctor? He said, oh, he's okay. You don't want okay, you want good when you got to get something like this done. So I appreciate you asking. I'm doing good.
That's great. You know, these golden years, man. I don't know how they got the golden in front of there. They're tough. But when do you get to hit a golf ball next?
He told me I was going to be chipping and putting in 3 weeks, which, you know, I'm pretty much right there now. And, you know, that's okay. But, you know, it's a twisting and everything else. You got to wait on that. But he thinks I'll be golfing in 3 months, which he's really aggressive, which I like too, because, you know, he wants to tell people that, you know, his patients came back really fast. So I like a more aggressive approach. And I feel like, you know, I'm probably on that schedule. And I saw him yesterday, and he said, yeah, he'll be back in 3 months, no problem.
That's terrific. Well, hey, give us a little idea about what's going on in your world right now. Man, you've had a hell of a career that we're going to talk about a little bit. But currently, I mean, aside from the surgery, which is pretty much occupying all of your time, tell us what's going on in Hank's world.
Well, I mean, you know, I've got a couple big projects. One is I'm doing a podcast on iHeartRadio, which I'm really enjoying. It's a different format for me. Of course, I was on SiriusXM for 5 or 6 years and had a great time there on PGA Tour Radio. I love SiriusXM. But, you know, I predicted a Korean would win the U.S. Senior Women's Open. And then a Lee would win, and Jo Jung Lee, number 6, won. And next thing you know, I wasn't there anymore. But I'm on iHeartRadio. I like doing podcasts. It gives you a little freedom to kind of, you know, talk about whatever you want. You can get more in-depth in interviews, and it's been going really good. I want to get you on, Jay, and visit with you. But I like doing that. My career's kind of gone full circle. I mean, I taught touring pros for many, many years. I haven't given a private golf lesson, honestly, since I started teaching Tiger in 2004. And I haven't given a golf lesson, period, since I, you know, really retired in 2010. So I teach, but I teach on Twitter. I teach on my podcast. I taught on my radio show. I teach at corporate outings. I teach at charity events. But you know, I don't teach day to day anymore. I teach with my, you know, video lessons that, you know, 1.5 million people get. So I feel like I've kind of gone full circle. I've gone from, you know, you start off teaching the average player or beginners, and then you are lucky enough, like I was, to teach touring pros for many, many years, over 30 years, and then, you know, now I've gone full circle. I'm back teaching, you know, amateurs how to play the game. I'm got a new book that's getting ready to come out and that I wrote, and I'm excited about that. And I have all my pain with my knees and my back. I started a company called Voodoo Pain Relief Cream. That's my product, and I'm doing great with that, helping a lot of people. I've had over 50,000 people that have been helped by my product. So, you know, it's one thing to help them with their golf game. It's another thing to help them with their life, and it's been really a fulfilling project for me. So I got plenty to keep me busy. Plus, on top of that, I have a 6-year-old son, Henry, and it's my only child. So I'm at a time in my life when I've got a lot of time to spend with him. It's interesting being 64 years old and having a 6-year-old. I saw Curtis Strange at a tournament a couple years ago, and he said, Hank, he said, we've been friends for a long time. He said, Hank, I heard you had a kid. And I said, yeah, I did. And he said, have you done the math on that? And I, you know, yeah, but I've done the math on that. But
that sounds like Curtis.
It sounds like I've done it. It keeps me young, though. So it's all good. I got a lot of great stuff going on.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So, Hank, what was it that drew you to teaching? Because for someone to dedicate their life to teaching like you have, it's it had to be a special kind of calling.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, I really, really believe. I mean, I like helping people. I mean, I saw, you know, teachers that taught the game and really enjoyed it. I mean, Jim Hardy was my big mentor when I was in college, and he just enjoyed teaching so much. I mean, it just, like, I thought, wow, man, he really loves doing this. And, you know, and then, you know, helping people get better at something, it's very fulfilling. And I don't know, I like trying to figure things out. That's always been my nature. I like trying to build things. You know, I think a lot of times in sports, like in coaching, a lot of the best coaches are, you know, they're pretty good players. I mean, like, I played in college at University of Tulsa, and I had a college golf scholarship, and I was all conference and, you know, whatever. But, I mean, that's 1,000,000 miles from playing the PGA Tour. But I always enjoy trying to figure things out, trying to get better. And as soon as I got into teaching and started having the opportunity to help people, you know, it was really fulfilling. And then, you know, I got very fortunate early on in my career and had the opportunity to work with Mark O'Meara. And, you know, I mean, after that, I mean, a lot of great things happened for Hank Haney. There's, you know, no doubt about that. You know, you got, no matter how much you love something or how hard you work at something, you still have to get, you have to get lucky too. And me meeting Mark O'Meara was, in my career, was clearly the luckiest day of my life.
Oh, and Mark O'Meara is one quality human being, that's for sure. Hank, what's the hardest part about working with a tour player?
Oh, I mean, boy, oh boy. I mean, it just all depends.
That's a loaded one, buddy.
I know, but it just depends on the person. I mean, some people, you know, it's their, you know, attitude that's hard to you know, get around, to get them to listen. I mean, like, when I helped Tiger for 6 years, I mean, he was a fantastic student. I mean, he was like, you know, my best student, my, you know, hardest worker. I mean, the, you know, most fun to teach. He was the most frustrating to teach. He was the toughest student. He was the hardest one to get to listen. I mean, he was just everything rolled into one. And everybody presents some kind of challenge, whether it's a mental challenge they have, or a physical challenge they have, or you know, it's just a swing mistake that's difficult to fix. But you know, when you're teaching touring pros, I mean, they've got to balance like trying to make a living and stay on tour and keep their card and, you know, live up to expectations. So it's quite different than, you know, teaching at, you know, a club level. But you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, they're all just students, and that's the way I always look at them. And, you know, everybody either, you know, they either miss to the right or they miss to the left, and they either hit it too high or they hit it too low. I mean, there's only so many things the golf ball can do. But I always tried to apply the same principles to everyone. But, you know, touring pros are definitely more challenging because, you know, their whole life and livelihood depends on the shot. So you have a lot more responsibility when you're coaching a touring pro.
You know, Hank, you said something that I thought was really cool when I was young and I had first met you, where the golf ball gives you all the answers, doesn't it? And what it does and how it flies.
Yeah, that's always been my philosophy. I mean, I learned from John Jacobs, who was, you know, in my mind, the greatest instructor the world's ever seen. He was very simple. He related everything to the golf ball. You work from the golf ball back. And I've always applied that in my teaching. I mean, I try to fix what the ball's doing. I don't look at somebody's swing and think, okay, this is what's wrong with your swing. I just look at their shots. What is their bad shot? What's their big miss? And I fix the big miss. I mean, if you fix the big miss, the bad shot, then you're going to have a better result. And you go from one miss to the next to the next. I mean, everybody's got a shot that they hit. You know, for a touring pro, it might just be once or twice a round. For an average player, it might be, you know, every shot they may slice the ball. But I've always used the golf ball as the, you know, part that allowed me to diagnose. And then after you diagnose, okay, this is what the ball's doing, this is what the club's doing at impact to make the ball do that. And then I always look and I think, okay, what's the club doing during the swing? You know, it was like, in my mind, it was like the person wasn't even there, but what's the club doing during the swing to cause this ball flight pattern? And then I looked and thought, okay, now what is that person doing with their body or their hands and arms to influence the club? And that's the approach that I always took to make my plan of attack as to how I was going to fix things. So it all boils down to, you know, really, what's your bad shot and fixing your biggest miss? Really, it doesn't matter what level of play at.
Well, that's going to wrap up the first part of the Hank Haney interview and the front nine. Come back, because on the back nine, we're going to wrap up the Hank Haney interview, and you're also going to hear a segment of The Leading Edge. This is Golf with Jay Delsing.
The 100,000-watt blowtorch for St. Louis sports, driven by Auto Centers Nissan, home of the 30-day return. WXOS and WXOS HD1, East St. Louis, 101 ESPN.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Leading Edge segment, and I have Sean Dean as my guest today. And Sean runs the golf cart division for Dean Team Automotive. You guys have the largest custom inventory in the entire Midwest.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that separates us is you can come and pick out what you want and take it home that day. You know, usually at any given time, we'll have anywhere from 40 to 50 plus carts in stock. And then obviously sometimes during the spring and summer when people clean us out, it gets a little lower. But for the most part, we always have about 40, 50 carts for people to choose from.
And Sean, let's talk a little bit about the Dean difference. I know one of the components of that is that you guys have this price market matching guarantee.
Yeah, so we actually, a lot of different things. When I set out doing this and learn more about it, I wanted to get into it heavy. We do all kinds of things, including the price matching guarantee for a cart that's built similar to ours. And to be honest with you, that's just because we believe in the way we build them so much that you won't find anything that will match our cart, truthfully. On top of that, we give a 12-month warranty that's included. You don't pay for it. It's included in the cart. We have financing specials as low as 3.99 on pre-owned refurbished carts, which you just don't see. We build our carts completely ourselves, which I think is huge because there's a lot of the places that don't. They just, you know, we'll take it right off a golf course and throw some wheels and tires on it and call it a day. And we actually take them down to a complete frame and rebuild them from frame up. So it's just a lot of quality goes into it, and that's what allows us to warranty them. And then we even give customers that buy carts from us monthly maintenance reminders. So every 30 days, we're telling them, you know, sending out videos of what they need to be doing and looking at, just so they get the best out of the product we're selling them.
And Sean, that's what I'm talking about. That's why you're on the leading edge segment. Though going above and beyond the normal call of customer service is what you guys are about.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's honestly, that's what the golf cart, you know, to me, that's what it is. It's custom. It's high end. It's something that's fun. And people want to hop in them and go and have a good time. They don't want to be thinking about all that stuff. So we even have in-house service. So that way, you know, again, then we can service our customers and make sure that we're where they want to choose to buy from.
Well, hope you enjoyed this week's Leading Edge segment. That was Sean Dean. Stay tuned next week for a new guest on the Leading Edge.
We're halfway there. It's time for the Back Nine on Golf with Jay Delsing. The Back Nine is brought to you by St. Louis Bank.
Welcome back to Golf with Jay Delsing. Jay and John are here, and we are going right back to the conclusion of the interview with Hank Haney. If you had to take a lesson from anybody, who would be the instructor you'd go to?
Oh man, it would depend. Like if I wanted to play the best I possibly could with what I've got. Then, you know, I would go to Butch Harmon, because Butch Harmon is the greatest coach in, you know, in the history of the game. Because I always think you have to look and say, you are what your record says you are. And that would probably be my choice for that. If I was looking to, change something and trying to, you know, get better with my golf swing, then, you know, I would go to somebody that taught a philosophy that was, you know, similar to the one that I thought was, you know, best or best for me. And then that way, you know, at least they would be speaking my language, you know. So, I mean, I just probably go right down, you know, off the top of the list. And, you know, I mean, the list for me is, you know, it's not a very long list, but, you know, I mean, obviously I've had a lot of great teachers that I've trained over the years, but if, you know, looking outside of my staff, I mean, I would probably start with Bob Koski, because, I mean, he's just a legend, and I always liked the way that he taught the game. But Bob Koski, Jim Hardy, you know, David Ledbetter, Jim McClain, I mean, to me, those are the iconic coaches in golf.
Yeah, boy, what a list. And Of all of the awards, Hank, I'm looking at your resume, and it's just impressive. There's so many Teacher of the Year awards in here. It's just crazy. But in 2019, you got voted into the World Golf Teachers Hall of Fame. In 2014, you're in the Texas Golf Hall of Fame. I mean, all of these teachers, are any of these awards more special than the other?
Boy, I mean, you know, it's just a kind of culmination of a career. I mean, and honestly, I just, you know, Jay, I've had great students. I mean, that's just, you know, you got to do something with them. I'm not saying, you know, that you can just have a student and not do anything with them. But if you don't have a great student, I mean, it's hard to, you know, get to where I've been able to get to. You know, the World Golf Teachers Hall of Fame was nice. But, you know, the Texas State Golf Hall of Fame, when you look at the names in there, like, you know, Jackie Burke and Jimmy DeMarin and Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson and Lee Trevino and, boy. I mean, I kind of look at that one and I think, wow, I mean, that one was pretty special, I have to admit.
That's some tall cotton to be hanging around with some of those folks. Crenshaw, yeah. Kite, there's some modern day players in there as well.
Yeah, Kent Crenshaw. I mean, I'm forgetting. So, I mean, it's like there's been so many great players in Texas. So that was a huge, huge honor.
Yeah, that's really neat. Hank, what do you think of the state of the game right now? The Tiger Woods effect, and you're right in the middle of the Tiger Woods effect, has just kind of spiraled into this massive power golf.
Yeah. I mean, it's different. I mean, the game is different. I don't know if it's better or it's worse. It's just different. I mean, I don't see how it's going to change. You know, they can talk about rolling the ball back or whatever they want to do, but I mean, it's still the longest hitter is going to still have an advantage. It was that way when Jack dominated. It's the same way when Tiger dominated. I always say, your potential in golf is determined by how far you can hit the golf ball. You hit it 150 yards, you can play a nice game of golf, but you're not going to be a single-digit handicap. You know, you hit it 250, you can be a low handicap, but you're not playing the PGA Tour. You hit it 275, you can play the PGA Tour, but you're sure not going to dominate the PGA Tour. And so, you know, distance is so important, and it, you know, it's gotten more so. There's no doubt about that. You know, I don't know. I love the game. I mean, how it was, how it is. You know, I look at it more than just from a professional level. I mean, when people like criticize the game, oh, it's boring. They just bomb it and they hit it out. And I'm like, okay, well, that's like the 0.1% of the golfer. You're talking about touring pros. I mean, what about the average player who plays the game? And there aren't any of those players that think the game is too easy or that want to, you know, hit the golf ball shorter. The one of the inhibiting factors of golf, and of course, you know, you're trying to grow the game, I'm trying to grow the game. I mean, there's certain things that are inherent with growing the game that are tough, you know. And to me, the top of the list, many people put, you know, the fact that it takes a lot of time or that it's really expensive. But to me, the big thing is it's just a really hard game. It's hard for people. It's hard for people to just get decent. So I'm kind of for whatever makes it a little bit easier for people to play the game because I want to see the game grow and flourish. And I don't think, like, such a big emphasis should be put on, like, touring pros. Like, you know, people are, like, all worried, well, we can't play this course anymore, or we can't play that course. And, well, you know, build some more tees or just go play another course. I mean, there's a lot of golf courses to play. You don't have to play this one or that one. I don't think it's necessarily bad. I mean, it's just different. And, you know, it's still a great game, and I don't think that's ever going to change.
Yeah, I just got a couple more things. I really appreciate the time. Hank, any sort of mulligan in golf and life, if you had to do one thing over, anything come to mind?
Oh, boy. You know, teaching-wise, there was, you know, I look back, like, on my time coaching Tiger, and the PGA at Baltusrol, and I stood on the driving range and I thought, you know, there's always this moment when you're watching the player like warm up and you know, I can see everything, Jay. So I'm like, I know that, you know, okay, the swing's looking a little like this. And, you know, like I might be thinking, okay, the right ball's coming into play or the left ball's coming into play. And as soon as I see that, I start thinking about, you know, what hole might be the problem. You know, that last swing means there could be an issue on number 12 and number 16 or something like that. And I was standing on that tee. This is the only time this has really, you know, happened to me. I look back my whole coaching career, coaching players. And, you know, I thought, do I say something? Do I not say something? Do I say something? Do I not say something? And I elected to not say something. And, you know, rarely was that the case, but it was just a judgment call. You know, I thought, you know, if I say something, I might make it worse or bring in another mistake. And I'm just going to let it go and see what happens. Anyway, Phil Mickelson won that tournament. Tiger played good. but not good enough. And I look back on that, and that was my regret when I co-starred. That day, I should have said something. And I saw a little something that wasn't right, and I didn't say anything. That's the one thing that comes to mind, you know, coaching wise. As far as my career, I mean, everything's been great. I don't look back. I mean, to be honest with you, I just look forward. I'm not a guy that, like, you know, has a lot of regrets, to be honest with you, because it's like the great thing about yesterday is that it's never going to happen again. You know, and I just move on to tomorrow.
I love this statement, Hank, too, that the past doesn't equal the future. I mean, just because I did that, some of the things that happened to me golf-wise, you know, you shake your head but go, I probably could never do that again, you know. So, like you said, I kind of share that. Last question. Of all of the awesome things that you've witnessed, is there the coolest – I mean, the Texas Hall – the State of Texas Hall of Fame would be something special. Is there any – thing that sticks out in your mind is your coolest golf experience? And I mean, you have so many.
Oh, you know, Mark O'Meara winning the Masters, 1998. I mean, easily number one, because that's just the, you know, I mean, Mark, when I first started coaching Mark, he was 124th on the 20 list on the PGA Tour. And then, you know, 2 years later, he finished second on the money list, and everybody thought, Hank Haney must know something. And then next thing you know, I was, you know, had a great teaching business. But, you know, at that point, like in 1998, you know, it was like Mark might not ever win a major. And then, you know, he wins the Masters. You know, I think he was 41 or something. And he went, you know, he backs it up with the Open Championship. But that was... You know, that was it, you know, for me as far as like a moment. But I mean, I guess I would probably say the fact when Mark got elected to the World Golf Hall of Fame too, because I felt like, you know, that was somebody that, like, you know, it's one thing if you coach in Tiger Woods. I mean, Tiger Woods was great before I ever helped him. I mean, I helped him improve his win percentage. I helped him improve his top 10 percentage, and his statistical improvement was notable when I helped him. But it's different than coaching Mark O'Meara from the beginning and then having him get elected to the World Golf Hall of Fame. So when you're a coach, it's nice. But don't get me wrong. I mean, being the Texas Golf Hall of Fame is incredible. Being the World Golf Teachers Hall of Fame is incredible. But none of it compares to seeing Mark O'Meara make the World Golf Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that you know what? There were certain guys that you competed with, and some guys you like more than others. Mark O'Meara is one of my favorites. He was always kind, always felt like he was such a genuine, authentic dude, and it was always fun to see him do well.
Yeah, and I'd always tell him, man, you're a great player. He said, Hank, I'm not a great player. And he said, I'm a good player. I'm a really, you know, I said, no, you're a great player. I mean, you know, he's won all these tournaments and that, and then when he got elected to World Golf Hall of Fame, I texted him. I said, well, but they don't have any good players in the Hall of Fame. They only got great ones in there.
Yeah. And he probably still said he was a good player, knowing Mark.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. I said, Jack's a great player. Tiger's a great player. I'm a good player.
So that was pretty neat. Hank was about as engaging as I've ever heard him in that interview.
I thought it was great. I thought the whole interview was great. I think there's just so much history there. He's seen so much of the change of golf, been kind of front and center of it, and just done so much from a player to an instructor to the big golf ranches to instructing the top players in the world. And I thought he was pretty dang humble about a lot of that piece of it, too. I liked a lot of things he said.
Yeah, going through a double knee replacement, yeah. And you got to be tough to do that. And he's also got a six-year-old.
Which is tougher, double knee replacement or a 6-year-old?
I think of the 6-year-old.
By a long shot.
At 64 years old, I think so. Well, that's going to wrap up the back nine segment.
Doster Olam & Boyle LLC are a proud sponsor of Golf with Jay Delsing here on 101 ESPN. The firm was started in January 2015 by Mike Doster, Jess Olam, and John Boyle, three veterans of the St. Louis real estate, banking, commercial, and corporate legal landscape. The firm was founded on the shared view that success should be measured by client and community satisfaction, not profits for partner. The firm's focus is on business, real estate, corporate finance and restructuring, and succession planning. Since its founding in 2015, Doster, Olam, and Boyle have been involved in real estate, business, and corporate transactions with a combined value in excess of over $1 billion. For decades, Doster, Olam, and Boyle lawyers have been recognized as leaders in their practice areas by their peers. Doster, Olam, and Boyle, LLC. Extraordinary talent, ordinary people. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Are the words community, trust, and civic pride important to you? How important to you are those words when choosing who you'd like to do business with? If you're like me, then they're very important. Enter St. Louis Bank. These key words are part of the cornerstone on which St. Louis Bank was founded. This bank is locally owned, and these guys live in our community. Did you know there's a new group of leaders at St. Louis Bank? This new group has doubled down on their commitment to St. Louis, being more involved and getting to know any like-minded person that shares these same values. St. Louis Bank wants to build something big together. When it comes to trust and honesty, don't take my word for it. You'll have to see for yourself. Look for the new locations in Edwardsville opening March 2020 and one at Highway 40 in Hanley coming April of 2020. You can call them at 314-851-6200, reach them at stlouisbank.com, or stop by their current location on South Outer 40 in Town and Country. And remember, St. Louis Bank wants to move your business forward together. I want to tell you about a strength training fitness program that helped me and that can help you. It's called 20 Minutes to Fitness. They have two locations, one in Clayton and one in Chesterfield. Every time you go to the gym with 20 Minutes to Fitness, you work with a professional trainer. They take you through specific machines and with specific exercises that are designed to help your golf game. We're talking about strength, flexibility, and those two components are huge to help you improve your game. Visit 20minutestofitness.com. Your first session is absolutely free. Get off the couch and get in shape. I want to thank Whitmore Country Club for sponsoring my show, Golf with Jay Delsing. There's 90 holes of golf at Whitmore. If you join out at Whitmore, you get privileges at the Missouri Bluffs, the Links of Dardenne, Golf Club of Wentzville, and all the cart fees are included in that membership. There's no food and beverage minimums and no assessments ever. They've got a great 24-hour fitness center, a large pool complex, three tennis courts, a year-round social calendar that is rocking out at Whitmore. There's kids clubs, junior golf, junior tennis, swim team available for your children. This is a family-friendly atmosphere, a wonderful staff, and you've got to go to the golf shop and visit my friend, Bummer. He is an absolute treat. Don't forget about the golf leagues, their skin games, members tournaments. Bummer and the staff out of Whitmore are continually running cool and fun golf events for you and your family. Visit their website at whitmoregolf.com.
Grab your friends, a cold one, and pull up a chair. We're on to the 19th hole on golf with Jay Delsing.
Welcome back to Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay. I've got John here with me, and we are on the 19th hole segment. I hope you enjoyed that Hank Haney interview. It was really fun to do and listen to one of the world's greatest teachers talk about some of his experiences. We've got an episode of Whack and Chase that we hope you enjoy.
Guys, believe it or not, somebody actually wants your help. Believe it or not.
What does that mean?
Well, I'm just saying. Just saying.
Wow.
Aaron is with us now for Whack and Chase.
Aaron, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, guys. Hey, it's Aaron from Scranton, Pennsylvania. How are you guys?
Pennsylvania.
Put another tack up on the map. I think that's seven states now we got covered, baby.
I got it at 16, but that's okay. We'll let somebody else count. I wasn't very good at counting at this thing. Hey, Aaron, thanks so much for calling in.
Hey, not a problem. Hey, I got a question for you guys.
Yep.
You know, we've been seeing so much about slow play, and like a lot of people, you know, I kind of lie to my wife about how long golf rounds take, you know, because I kind of like to have beer on some greens. You tell her it takes 4.5 hours. You know, it's supposed to take 3.5, right? And so you get up there on the tee, and, you know, everybody, you know, we got John over here who's lined up for his fifth putt on the third hole. And, you know, first off, how do you guys address slow play at your own home country clubs?
Well, now, wait a second. You need time to think about that, or are we going to have to ask him a second question? Because that's a good topic. We should just maybe roll on a little bit here.
Yeah,
slow play.
Let's just roll.
We always talk about that for sure.
That slow play is
the scourge.
It is. It's one of the things that personally I can't stand the most. If it's a guy that I know pretty well, Aaron, the group will go up to him and say, "You gotta go faster."
Yeah.
And he's like, "I'm going as fast as I can." It's like, you're not ready to play when it's your turn. You're dilly-dallying. You're playing with your towel. You're doing something else. You know, someone's over there lining up their putt. You need to be lining up your putt, too, so that you don't have to be so taken aback by the time
it's your turn to go. You're cutting into Aaron's beer time. That's the bottom line here, right?
Well, that's what we're trying to solve, right? How to get Aaron more beer time.
And that's my exact problem, you know, because my wife, she thinks 4.5 hours I'm supposed to be home. And, you know, I want to be done in 3.5.
Well, you know, sometimes your car runs out of gas.
Yeah. Well, I've had that problem, too.
Have you used that? I'm sure there's what are a few other excuses you've used on why you were going to be late?
Are some of the best.
What are the best? What's your go-to, Aaron?
Oh, I mean, I've had an arm cut off. I've had 15 grandmas pass away. I think, frankly, I've got a really good one. I think she knows I'm lying to her, though.
Oh, I don't think she knows. No,
not with the arm cut off and 15 grams.
No, those arms regenerate all the time.
That's exactly right. That's what I keep telling her. Hey, Ron, I do have a serious question for you guys, though.
Okay, let her rip.
You know, with the idea of the Pro Tour and how things, as far as speed of play goes, is there any movement, or do you guys think there's any movement on letting them use rangefinders?
That's a great question. We talked about this I don't know how many times. Now, they let them use rangefinders in the amateur levels. Yeah. The USGA has signed off. Aaron, I think within the next 5 years, they'll be approved for the PGA Tour. It just doesn't make any sense not to. We can use them in the practice rounds. We can use them in the pro-ams. That doesn't make any sense not to be able to use them. So I really think they will, and I really think that'll help speed up play. Even if you can just pick up a minute or two a group, it makes a huge difference.
What the heck is the caddy going to do? Who's going to stand by here? And I know what's going to happen. I'll tell you exactly what's
going
to happen.
They're going obsolete. Caddies are going to be obsolete. We're going to have robots out there.
No, they're going to still caddy, and they're going to say, we're just going to cut your
cut your Achilles tendon.
No, cut your pay in half. Cut the fee.
Pay?
Yeah, exactly. Cut the feedback.
The real trick, though, is I'm trying to become a caddy on Pro Tour, but I have no idea what I'm doing. So if I had a green book and a gun, I could pretty well figure it out.
Yeah, and then you have those things, and they have those things, and now you're not going to get paid. You're going to tote around. It's going to be like back in the college days when we would caddy for Mrs. Havisham, and she would pay $7.50, and I'd carry doubles for $15, and they'd give me like a quarter for a tip. That's what it's going to be like. And Kuchar next time is going to pay that Hispanic caddy down in Mexico, and instead of paying him $2,000, he's going to want to pay him $950.
That's true.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Really
okay, Aaron,
true.
We love those questions, but give Jay a golf question relative to your game, your swing, your approach, something that might stump him that you need to know.
Sure. So I'm about an 8 handicap. And I have at least 2 or 3 duffs around the green. And the guys that I play with locally who are a lot better, they talk about where they put the ball at. They also talk about the concept of bounce. What's your traditional setup when it comes to around the green and stopping from doing that little dig into the ground, your club stops, and it goes 2 feet?
Okay, Jay's up off his seat, pacing back and forth, trying to figure out how in the heck he's going to answer that question. So here's how we do this. I'm going to ask you a couple questions that will give him more insight to you so that he can better give you the answer that you need. So my first question is, would you rather be fishing, hunting, or golfing if you had a choice of what you're going to do as your priority?
Well, if I'm on a golf show, I'm going to say golfing, but in real life, I'm probably going to say fishing.
Fishing. So I'm a fisherman, too. What do you like to fish for, Aaron?
Crappie, bass, anything that involves a moving lure.
Absolutely. A little Midwest guy. Love that right there. Okay, awesome. I got to dig up one more because he's still pacing. He doesn't quite have the answer that he's looking for. What's the funniest thing you've ever seen on a golf course?
Funniest thing that I've ever seen on a golf course was my best friend hitting out of the sand trap, me betting my buddy that he would, a dollar that he wouldn't be on the green. He ends up sculling it, hitting me in the shoulder. The ball drops on the green, and I owed my buddy a dollar. And that's not a joke. That happened. I was more upset about owing him a dollar than I was about getting
than that bruise on his shoulder.
Just full speed hit.
That's awesome. Well, one more thing, so Jay can answer that question. Give us a little bit about: are you a big guy? Are you a little guy? Are you athletic? Obviously, you're low handicap. Give Jay a little bit of feedback there so he can kind of give you a sense of what kind of shot he's wanted to talk to you about.
Sure. So, I mean, if you were a random stranger, you saw me on the street, you would say, that's a rather large man.
Okay.
How big is large, Aaron? How big is large?
I'm about 6'5".
Nice.
You know, I played some college basketball.
Nice.
I'm a little bit athletic, but obviously, like everybody, I eat probably 5 too many donuts every morning.
Okay. Okay, well, I can see Jay. He's settled back in his seat. He's got a big smile on his face, so he is ready to solve.
So, Aaron, the short game is my specialty. I absolutely love it. And you brought up...
You were born a great short game player, weren't you, Jay?
No. My dad had a description of my short game. I'll clean it up a little bit because we're trying to be a family show. He said, son, your short game is either penthouse or outhouse. Those were neither of the words he used. And I was either really good or really bad. And you mentioned the concept bounce, and most amateurs, Aaron, don't really have any idea how to play with the bounce on their wedge. And when you're hitting balls fat and you're hitting balls thin, it's basically the same thing that's getting in the way, and that's the leading edge. That's the very front edge of the wedge that should be sliding under the ball if you're coming in at a decent angle of approach. One of the challenges, because I'm 6'5" as well, is that you need to be shallow, which means coming from a little more in and around you on those wedges, and it is not easy when you're taller.
So you want the blade low to the ground for as long as you can. Is that what you mean by shallow?
Yeah, you do, and it's going to go. And what's interesting is that the short game doesn't take a huge amount of power. It takes almost no power. We really don't want our lower body. We want it stabilized and staying, our shoulders kind of staying on top of our feet and our knees and hips and just the bounce. The great example of the bounce is when you're in a bunker. Can you play bunker shots well, Aaron?
Oh, I'm just absolutely horrible. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so this goes hand in hand. Okay. So I'm going to tell you how to use your 60 degree in a bunker and explain to you where the bounce comes in. So I want you to get in a bunker next time, and I want you to draw a line behind the ball, about 2 inches behind the ball. And then I want you to make this line, and I want you to get rid of the ball because we got to practice hitting with the bounce of your wedge on that line with a little bit of an up and down motion. Okay, just a slight up and down motion. But I want you to take the bounce, which is the very bottom of the club. You'll look under at the bottom of your sandwich, and there's a flange under there. It's unmistakable. It's the very bottom of your club. And I want you to take that club and that part of the wedge, and I want you to try to hit it on that line.
Almost like slap it on the sand, Jay?
It's going to be like slapping it or spanking on the sand like that. And what happens is the wedge is made, Aaron, to basically slap the sand, move through it, and get the ball up in the air. And so by using that bounce and driving that bounce into the sand, the wedge goes right underneath the ball. And that's what you have to do when you're in grass around the greens. You have to let the bounce hit behind the ball, coming from a little shallower angle attack than in a bunker, but having it move right through there. What happens, Aaron, is you get anxious, and then you start helping the thing up, and you try to lift it with your hands, you'll lift it with your upper body, you'll get in the way of it and just mess this thing up. And so what we do with the bounce is we just keep our body there, we use the bounce, and we let the club move right on through like the ball's not even there, and the club does all the work.
So get comfortable in the bunker, and then start moving outside. Maybe hit 3 or 4 bunker shots,
yep.
1 or 2 outside, 3
yep.
or 4 bunker shots, and keep doing that.
First things first, grab that club and lighten up on your grip, because I know you're going to be white knuckling that thing, because anxiety does that to us. You're going to be squeezing the hell out of it. So if you're currently squeezing it as hard as you can, I want you to go half that hard And then once you feel like what half of that hard is, go half of that hard. So it's going to change. If you're squeezing it at a 10, it's going to put you down as like a 3 or 4. And that's going to help you get some feel, Aaron, because you got to be soft and supple and let your hands do the work around the greens.
And one other key part, though, to this, super key part, your best buddy in the group, get him right on the other side of the pin so when you scull the crap out of it, it hits him in the shoulder, drops on the green, and you got a shot to make it par.
Absolutely. And don't ask him about insurance or anything.
Is that something you think you can do, Aaron?
No, that is wonderful advice. I appreciate that, guys.
Well, and this is how we end these segments. First of all, thanks so much for calling in, and if this helps you, tell everybody where you got it. Right here.
I will do that.
Jay Delsing Golf at Whack and Chase. But, Aaron, you keep sculling and fatting that thing, tell them we never met.
Well, I appreciate your guys' time and advice.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's going to wrap up the Whack and Chase episode and this show. John and I appreciate you listening. Me, thank you so much for keeping us together, working the board for us. We will talk to you next week. Hit 'em straight, St. Louis. This is Golf with Jay Delsing.
That was Golf with Jay Delsing, brought to you by Whitmore Country Club. Tune in next Sunday for more from Jay, John, and the other pros and experts from the golf world. In the meantime, you can find all of Jay's shows at 101ESPN.com as well as at jdelsinggolf.com.